I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 404. I type it into my little sheet that I've talked to you about.
And a palindrome of sorts.
I had a typo.
I don't think it's of sorts.
We were almost episode 4045.
Whoa! What does make sense?
How did a 5 get in there?
I guess they're close to each other.
But there's not even a...
I would type 404 and I hit the 4 and the 5 at the same time.
Oh, okay. Because I'm like, wait... I get the adding an extra zero, but we got a 5, too.
It's crazy in the future.
Yeah.
And I don't want to tell you too much, but let me tell you this.
Yeah.
The Warner Brothers figured it out.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's great.
Joe's been saying they would
yeah,
for telling
it's you. It's great here.
You can't say Joe didn't tell you.
Yeah. All the Justice League stuff is amazing.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
It works.
4,045. Are we famous yet?
I am.
Oh.
Joe's okay. Yeah. He's like, you know.
Joe's okay.
Like at a con, they do I get the special room for
Fair
a
enough.
Photo op.
Yeah.
You just do yours
at the table. I'm an artist, alley.
Yeah.
Okay. I can deal with that.
Kevin's not an artist.
Kevin's checking wristbands.
Perfect.
Yeah. So.
Well, hey, gotta eat.
Quit eating the wristbands. So.
Well, gotta eat.
Gotta eat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're paying him in wristbands.
Yeah. Like a billy goat.
I'm not proud.
Where'd all the wristbands go? Kevin's over there with a wristband hanging out of his mouth.
Hey, as long as they keep flavoring them like the Mr. Scent markers.
Kevin's just like, I'm on my break.
Yeah. They're like, at least eat them before they put the wristbands on. Quit.
Stop trying to put the wristbands on with your teeth.
Quit trotting around after people nibbling at their wristbands.
The red ones are cherry.
Don't eat the black ones.
Oh, I hate like black licorice. Yeah, I would never.
Okay. I was like, wait a second.
No, I had to quickly.
I knew where you were going with that.
Thank you.
Black licorice is disgusting.
My dad loved black licorice.
I think that's an old-timey candy.
It is an old-timey candy, for sure.
Because they only had two kinds.
Right. So they hadn't invented chocolate yet.
Right.
Did he like extra salt on it? Because some black licorice has extra salt to bring out that flavor.
That sounds awful.
I tried a little nibbles, like someone had the little bites that are into chunks. I tried a little tiny bite of the extra. Oh,
my mother-in-law likes blackjack gum.
What's that?
I have no idea. Like anytime, like
is it like novelty gum that turns your teeth black?
I don't think so.
You look like a hockey player.
No, like anytime I've only seen it one place, and I make sure that I pick it up, just because you know, inheritance.
Sure.
And but yeah, like any she I don't
I'll
even
take
know
that for later.
Yeah.
Boop. My dad also liked burnt cookies.
Oh.
Like whenever my mom, back when that was a thing,
parents?
Yeah, like them being like married.
Oh.
Like not. I mean, they're also both dead, so it works on both.
I didn't know where we were going with that.
It works on both levels.
It does,
that's the genius of the joke. But she would like whenever she would make Christmas cookies.
Yeah,
she would always have a special batch.
Well, it doesn't matter how
burn.
You cook those Christmas cookies, whether they're not burnt or burnt, they still taste like crap.
There's another kind of...
I hate Christmas cookies.
What?
Oh, no.
Well, they were chocolate. She would make chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, then that's different.
You're talking about sugar cookies.
Yes.
Sugar cookies are good.
Oh, peanut butter cookies? Oh, that's where it's at.
You shut your whore mouth.
I can't do it.
Ripping on sugar cookies.
What about
a snickerdoodle?
No.
We have a guest who's like trying to figure out if he's allowed to talk yet, so I'm going to introduce him. Okay. Hey, Steve.
How's it going?
Okay, that's enough out of you.
What are your feelings about Christmas cookies?
Where do you stand on sugar cookies?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Now,
so where do you stand on Joe being an idiot?
That, look, we've been doing this
for a long time.
He's well aware of how much of an idiot I am.
You got to remember, the Review STL podcast was before Real Spoilers.
That's right.
So
that's right.
We've known Joe for a long time.
Big old idiot.
What number are you on?
15, I think.
Yeah, that is long retired. They're out there. You might still find them. There's a couple of them still floating around out there.
Those were good times. But going back to cookies real quick, because this is what's really important.
Yeah.
I like to eat the cookies before they harden. I think like the warm where they're a little bit.
Okay.
That's good.
I'll give you that.
I like my chocolate chip cookies medium rare.
Yeah.
Like they
show a little bit of blood.
Still pink on the inside.
Yeah. Like my ladies.
Oh.
Once
they're dry, like chocolate
chip
cookies.
I think you mean
cookies. Lady. Yeah.
Lady.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
He means in the proverbial sense, like if he were not married before or everything.
Yeah, like there's been, she's not my own.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Right. Hate to break it to you, but this guy back in the day.
Yeah.
Slaying.
Oh, I was crushing.
The comic book shop after hours.
Come on.
That back room.
Yeah.
Yeah, those.
Let's just say they didn't have to repaint the walls white.
Yeah.
Anyone?
Let me tell you.
Anyone?
Those books are in bags and boards.
For a reason.
Because of me.
You were the reason they invented bags and boards.
Yes.
This guy keeps jizzing all over these comics.
Like, these cherry Pop-Tarts are ruined.
And I'm not talking about the food.
What happened to this copy of One-Fisted Tales?
Our anime section.
Also, Dan's not here, if he didn't know.
Yeah, you can tell, because I'm just
going off.
This is late night.
Yeah.
So, I don't even know where I was at anymore.
Cookies. Medium rare.
Oh, yeah. I like them like undercooked on the center.
Chocolate chip cookies, when they're dried out and crumbly, they just don't taste as good. But when they're like just out of the oven, they melt. The chocolate chips are a little melty. Like
stuff.
That's, I think we can all agree.
We
that's,
can agree.
Yeah,
that
that's
true.
Like saying, do you like puppies?
Yeah.
I too like puppies.
Yeah.
We are now friends.
Yeah.
We just become best friends.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
15 years, I think, or 10. Yeah. Did it just celebrate 10 or 15?
I thought it was 15.
Yeah, whatever. I think it's
no,
10
it's
on that
10.
One.
Is it 10?
But man, that.
Because I reviewed it.
Yeah.
Oh, did you?
So it could have been 15.
Guys, okay. 10 years for Step Brothers. That's
the
amazing.
One of the
time.
Last good Will Ferrell movies. Comedies.
Yeah. It was. I mean, that's cult
towards
classic.
The end of
that
it,
is
yeah.
definitely one of those.
Because semi-pros after that, and that one's not all that good.
I remember when it came out, though, initially, people were like, oh, it's no Anchorman. And I remember giving a rave review. Like, I'm like, this movie's great.
No,
man.
It
I don't
came
know
around. That's
about.
A
yeah.
that's a video, just like Anchorman. I mean, his movies take some time sometimes, but it's like, yeah, that movie's great. That's such a quotable, great movie.
Just
but,
put your balls in my snare, John. I'm so not a raper. I don't know why that's the one that always kills me. I'm so not a raper.
So much room for activities.
Yeah. Smashes it. So just some real quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. Check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/realspoilers, and our Patreon account at patreon.com/realspoilers. So... there.
Now, they can't get into the account, but they can look at the page.
That's true.
I'm not
for
letting
the
them
right,
into the account.
Depends on how much they want to kick
well,
in.
Well, now, if they want to be part owners and they want to invest, they may allow them access into the account. But
so it is possible.
It is possible
it
for
is
the right.
Technically possible.
Anything's possible.
So
everything's for sale, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, we know.
Yeah. We the only reason we haven't hoarded out is because no one has asked us.
I like when the guy in the review a couple back or whatever said, I love how there's not ads during the episode. Like, I'm not listening to Blue Apron, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, yeah, we totally love to not serve those up.
If Blue Apron or Dollar Shave Club or MailChimp was like, hey, here's 20
or like,
bucks.
Even female chimps.
Yeah, I don't care.
Whatever.
Don't care.
Any port in a storm.
That's right. That's
constant
right.
Constant contact, semi-constant contact. Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah. The post office. We don't. Stamps.com.
Stamps.com.
Move over. Yeah. We're advertising the post office. We're bringing it back.
They're trying.
We're kicking it old
they're
school.
They're like, did you know that you can not print postage stamps at home? Like, you can drive to the post office and meet those friendly employees who will sell you stamps. It's
Do you
amazing.
Like waiting in line?
Yeah.
Do you like meeting new people? got a place for you.
I'm pitching this. This is our next advertiser. It's going to be USPS.
Do you have a rich collection of tear tab numbers?
Yes. Do you collect those? I know where you can add to your collection.
Collect them all. Trade with your friends. Yes.
Are you looking for the new Elvis or I Love Lucy commemorative stamps? Well,
which is still a thing.
Yeah, they do.
If it ain't broke, man.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Elvis, because he's still alive, but stamps, yes, they still do that.
Yeah, Elvis.
So we should probably talk about Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
We have one here today.
You got the crazy part, right? Yeah.
I don't think we said, did we say our names?
We did. Steve. No. Yeah, we just Steve. So let's everybody else.
Well, we're leaving, I guess.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. So we're tackling Crazy Rich Asians, and we invited Steve. He's been on the show before, but you can't see us, so I just wanted people to know that he's Asian, so he'll have some insight, possibly, that three white guys wouldn't.
That's probably true.
Yeah. That's... We thought that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Not to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
No pressure.
Now, say something fascinating that's Asian.
There it is.
So, I have a question. I've been reading that people are starting to not like the word Asian.
Oh.
I think it more has to do with the fact that it's such a generic reference.
Right, it's really a broad term.
Like,
yeah.
People are so proud, like, of where they're from. Like, Japanese people like to say they're Japanese, you know?
Right, right.
South Koreans, South Korea. So, like...
We wouldn't say Europeans.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, Asian is almost, in a sense, it's kind of being seen as, like, the term Oriental, which at one point in time, it was fine. No one really cared. But
sure.
Now they're more trying to be proud of where they're from, like, give themselves an identity, so they try to stray away from the Asian generic term.
Right.
Because, well, I mean, if you're Indian, you're Asian too, right?
Right.
So, that's a completely different...
Yeah, I mean, a Russian is from Asia.
Yeah,
so.
You wouldn't put them in the same category, so it's the same thing. Just,
oh, no, totally.
No, I'm not saying...
I found it interesting that there's a shift, because I'm old enough to... We're growing up, it was like Oriental was the polite term.
Sure. What are they, rugs, Tom?
Right, no, and that's what, and but that was, yeah, the, yeah. The, no, things are Oriental, but, and so it's, I find it fascinating to watch the etymology of words and terminology like that. So,
hey, don't say they eat edamame because they're Asian, Tom, please.
I don't even know what that is.
I gotta tell you, edamame, tasty as hell.
It's delicious.
Yeah,
it's
what is it?
It's like green.
It's like a little
flat
bean.
Pea pod, yeah. Yeah. Type. Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah, we know.
Veg-
yeah. Once you said the word green,
yeah.
We knew Tom wasn't going to eat it.
You unless, didn't have him at vegetable.
Unless it was green sprinkles on a sugar cookie.
Boom. Medium rare. It's St. Patrick's Day. That's how his mom got him to eat the vegetables.
Yeah, right,
it was
right.
A green food diet and the sugar cookies. And
oh, because I'm Irish?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, no, I did. As soon as you said St. Patrick's Day, I was like, well, this is weird.
Well, yeah, right. I'm pretty sure I went that route because of the green. I don't feel like I but.
In retrospect, I'm overtly racist to Irish people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
We've got it coming.
Yeah.
They've left you alone for long enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had
a
good run.
Yeah. But that's an interesting argument because you're totally right. I hadn't heard that, but it makes sense because that is so generic.
Yeah. So when the movie's called that, I'm curious to, like, in 10, 20
I mean,
years.
The whole movie is set in Singapore and Japan, so they don't, like, crazy rich Japanese doesn't really roll off the tongue.
Well, I don't know. I mean, why would that be any harder?
I don't know, because it's a longer title.
Well, the fact is the book's called that, and it's a best-selling book, so at this point, it's not like they could even...
Totally.
You know, it makes sense to adapt it based on the book, which was written, is it 2012, or does anyone...
2013,
13,
I think.
Okay, so...
Man,
you know,
that's a quick turnaround.
It was a different time 5 years ago where, like, people weren't maybe, you know, things...
Oh, I'm not...
I'm
like,
not, and I'm not saying...
I'm not mad about it.
No, no,
like,
no.
It also makes sense in the book because there's more than one, like, the people are from more than one country. There's
right.
Japanese, there's Chinese, there's Singapore, so you can't have crazy rich... You know, Chinese, Japanese, Singapore.
Yeah.
That'd just be a terrible title.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's like it's sensible that it's a catch-all in this situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Does anybody know, is the author of this book, like, was he crazy rich?
Man, I hope. Oh, I don't know.
To know about the world?
I don't think so. Like, I think he was raised in Singapore, and it was supposed to be kind of semi-biographical, but I don't know if he was
overly
rich.
Like, I wonder if he was the
rich.
Female character that dated a woman that had the crazy rich, and I wonder if he flipped it.
Yeah, I don't know, because I saw like a video that he was in where he was hanging out with some crazy rich women who were really into fashion, and one of our podcast listeners actually posted it.
Oh,
and and it was interesting, but it was, I, he seemed very comfortable in that world. You know what I mean? And
I was just
curious if he was somehow already kind of a part of that world.
I wonder if, especially since he had a best-selling book, maybe he's crazy surrounded himself. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we know that we've talked about it before that Netflix wanted to buy this for $100 million and he turned it down.
Yeah. So the author is Kevin Kwan, and he stated that his intention in writing the novel was to introduce a contemporary Asia to a North American audience. He claimed the novel was loosely based on his own childhood in Singapore. And they don't actually say his background on here on Wikipedia, but it was based on his childhood in Singapore, so he must have been surrounded at least at some level. He clearly,
So. Netflix wanted to pick this up for $100 million, and he turned it down.
And I will say, there's a character in the movie when I saw the video that I think kind of looks like him.
Oh, really?
The guy that's throwing the bachelor party, the guy from
Silicon Valley.
Is he okay? Yeah. I only watched the first season.
Yeah, he's the guy that's living in, what's his name's house.
Okay,
like the Asian kid.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
So it does say, when I went to his personal page, it said that he was born in Singapore to an established Chinese family. His great grandfather was founding director of Singapore's oldest bank, the Overseas Chinese Banking Corporation, and his grandfather was an ophthalmologist who became Singapore's first Western trained specialist. So I'm guessing that his family has money.
He's doing all right.
So. It sounds like they probably had money, but maybe not. Like enough to be in that world, but not enough. They weren't maybe necessarily
of that world.
In that world, upper.
Yes.
Yeah, he saw it. He probably was surrounded. And
it's interesting in the movie how like they're definitely even within that
there
world.
Are classes there inside are, the inside of a class.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah,
totally.
And they talk about like Cousin Oliver.
Yeah.
Is one of those like he's like I'm part of this, but I'm not part of this.
Right.
It's interesting though. This is just something that you'll always tackle through life is like no matter how great you become at something or how rich, there's always someone richer or better. Like,
sure.
Like, and so it's interesting
unless
that even
the guy from Amazon.
Well, yeah, but
but you know what? There's some dude in Dubai.
That's probably true.
Oil
though.
And gold.
Yeah,
those
that's
oil
very
barons.
True. Yeah.
So, yeah. So
they're just like, how much do you have?
Yeah. So there's always someone richer. And so it's interesting when you see even in this lifestyle, like you said, there's classes and it's like, that's how it works. There's always someone. So you think, oh my gosh, if I could just get to this level, I'd be at the uprush, like the top of the top. And then you still have to deal with these things. It's interesting. But right from the beginning, I love how they establish how crazy rich they are. I mean, this is a perfect way to set it up because the matriarch of this family and her kids are
Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah. From Crouch and Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Right,
she's
right.
Awesome. And so she's coming into this hotel and Out of the Rain, and the people are like, this is a private hotel and they're acting like she doesn't belong there, you know, and definitely, I mean, I guess that's discriminating.
I was having I'm going to sound really naive here, but like, I was having trouble telling if this guy was a snob or a racist.
I think it's both.
Because it's like, because the scene takes place in, I think, what, 1995?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, was it really like,
well, where was
in 95, somebody would be like, I'm not going to rent you a hotel room because you're...
Where were they?
I thought it was more of a poor thing, but that's... I definitely think it was more that they were like coming out of the rain.
Wasn't there like a racist issue? Like, weren't... God dang, I wish I could remember. Like, I felt like that Asian folks were...
As he points at me.
I wasn't. I realized I had done that after the fact. Like, I was just... and I was like, no, that's not what I meant to do.
Well, either way.
But, like, I felt like that there was a divide in London and Britain with, like, Asian immigrants coming into the country. Now, that could have been a very long time ago, and they just kind of used that in this moment.
I think you're thinking of the 1800s.
But wasn't maybe? But I mean, I feel like
weren't they making railroads back in '95?
Yes,
is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
they're called subways, Kevin.
Yeah, because McDonald's was doing the Monopoly game.
Right. Yeah,
everybody wanted the railroads.
Everybody wanted the railroads.
So anyway, so they come in out of the rain, and the manager or the front desk guy is like, oh, "This is a private hotel. You need to go." And she's like, "Can I use your phone?" And then she's outside.
But she had already made a reservation. Like that's
The reservation was already on the thing. That's what
right, but they're like,
Airbnb.
We don't have this. Like, they're like, there's, you don't know what you're talking about. So she has to go outside in the rain, and they're all crowded in a payphone trying to stay dry. But I love, she comes back in, and she has made a phone call. We find out to her husband, who is called the like proprietor owner of this hotel, and because of this little oversight, she just went ahead and bought the hotel.
Yeah. Yes,
like that is FU money to the next degree.
No, like hadn't they already bought it? Isn't that
no,
the deal?
No, she called to buy the hotel.
I couldn't tell.
To fire this guy.
I was kind of going back and forth in my head.
I thought that they had already bought it.
No, I think the FU, I think this shows that they're crazy right. rich. Like, you just slighted me. I have so much money, I will just buy a hotel.
That's, how, I, say, that's how I interpret I mean, it as well.
Okay. I thought it was a little vague as to whether or not it was a pre-existing deal. Or
no, I don't think so, because she was going to stay there, and like if I don't think she was necessarily dealing with the business as much as her husband. Like, I don't think she was going there to do business. It was a family thing, and I think I just think this is perfect, and the way I interpreted it sets the tone, because it's like, this is crazy rich money. Like, you slight me, I don't just like get you fired. I take your job and you still work for me now, and I tell you, like,
I'd be like, you're the new bellboy.
It's awesome. So
here's what I will say about this movie. Is I think romantic comedies tend to fall down tropes that are stupid and don't make sense, right? Where it's just like, you and I have a miscommunication where all it takes is like us having a conversation and it's squashed. This movie never does that.
That's true. It does.
They have the conversations and it gets squashed immediately.
Yeah, I do love that. I mean, there was definitely some turmoil towards the end because there has to be some kind of conflict. But I like that it wasn't the stereotypical.
Right. But the turmoil made sense.
Right.
We'll get into it.
No,
as
it
we
wasn't
get to
the
end.
Lack of communication.
Yeah.
No, there was communication. I don't necessarily agree with how it was handled, but you know, it's emotional and there's a lot at stake. But it wasn't that, oh, I'm not talking to you, so now I'm gonna.
Yeah, so many times it's like the conflict could be solved if the two people would just
talk.
Or if somebody would ask a question.
Right.
You know, I mean, Lost was bad about that. I know it's not a romantic comedy, but if anybody would ask a question. But they'd be in these situations and they would never ask obvious questions. They would just continue to wonder.
Right.
I'm like, what the?
Where in this one, they ask the questions and they have the conversations, and it felt much more natural.
And that being said, it's a very cliche story.
Yes.
But I mean, you know.
But they do it.
There's really good action movies that are very cliche. Like, it's a genre.
No, this was a fantastic flick.
They're not reinventing the wheel, but they're making the best damn wheel possible.
Yeah.
Yes. Right?
Well, I think I said on Facebook, I was like, romantic comedies are like jazz. Like, it's not about the melody. It's about how you dress it up.
Yep.
And also, like jazz, most of them suck.
I was watching the last season of The Office, and Dwight and Angela were talking, she's like, I'm so dumb or whatever, and she's like, said something about jazz, and Dwight just says, no, don't be crazy. No one's as dumb as jazz. Just play the right notes. Like, that show is so smart, and I love that joke. I know I'm butchering it, but like, oh, it's so good.
Yeah. So then we jump to the university where we meet Rachel, where she is. What you think it looks like is where she's just gambling. You think she's in a casino.
She's a student at first. Like, I thought it was a...
She's very young looking.
She's very young looking. So that, you know, she's going back and forth.
Like,
playing.
Can you be a professor that young? Doesn't it take a long time to become a professor?
I don't know.
I don't know what...
Who knows how young she actually is, but she looks youthful for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you figure, we'll say late 20s.
Yeah.
It's possible, I guess. So, yeah, she's playing poker with this guy, and she outplays him, and she beats him. And then the lights come up, and we find out that
it's good writing.
It's very good writing.
This movie has some good writing. I love
some of
the dialogues that she delivers throughout the movie, and the other characters, like, they're smart.
Yeah.
The writing is smart, and I really appreciate that, and I think that's what also elevates it from a basic rom-com, because as you said, it's not as quote-unquote dumb, and the actions aren't as dumb, but also the way the characters speak they sound more like real people and people that know what they're talking about. They're not just these flighty characters that, ooh, I'm in love and I'm going to do whatever it takes, and, you know, it's not just dumb decisions for love's sake. It's real, you know? These were real people.
One of the things I point out in my review is that it felt like an organic conversation between people.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
There are movies that are like they have scenes set in like a college classroom, but it feels like a dialogue written. It doesn't feel like a classroom conversation.
Yeah.
This movie actually felt like, you know, she was a teacher and she was teaching students. And the conversations, like when they go to Singapore and like they're out in the town getting all the food from the street vendors, that actually feels like you're there
yeah.
with them.
Yeah, I totally
know,
agree.
Hanging out, like getting a beer and eating food. It doesn't feel like a script and they're just reading the lines.
That is such a better scene than, do you remember that that Aaron Eckhart movie, and was it Jennifer Aniston and Aaron Eckhart, when they go out on the town and they're supposed to be having quote unquote fun, and it was like a montage like this, but it looked like the dullest, stupidest night ever. And then you have something like this where it looks like friends organically, like Steve said, like this is how you do it.
Yeah.
Like some of these scenes in a romantic type of thing, just like that movie was trying to be, they feel so contrived and so forced. And yes, everything about this movie felt organic, and especially since the world is a world that, I mean, I don't think any of us live in this world, and so it all should seem bigger and crazier than you know, life, but it still felt real. Like, you're like, wow, you know, there's rich people out there, and these all feel like really crazy rich people. Like,
yeah.
Everything about this movie was believable, which was really cool.
Yeah, what the scene that Steve's talking about is like, we meet Nick and Rachel, and they're together, and they're going back to Singapore for Nick's best friend's wedding. And this is the first time that Rachel is going to meet the family.
And she doesn't know anything about
which
the
I think
family.
Is like, that is a trope that could have gone the other way. And like Nick give, when they're explaining, they're like, look, we're flying first class. And she's like, Rachel is just like, I'm economy. Like,
we
I
can't
don't
afford this. They like, she had like meals that her mom had made them.
Yeah. She's got
like,
Tupperware things.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I did question. It was a little bit stretching believability when like for a year, she didn't know that his family's crazy.
But if he
like,
never,
I just feel
if he
like
never let on,
but
I mean,
just feel
kinda,
like
at the same time, though, like she's a professor of economics. Wouldn't she like at least have heard of possibly of this family that's, you know, has billions upon billions
of
dollars?
Well, and one person sees them. Have they never been in public? One person sees them and is able to send things all around the world. Oh, he's this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, how do you go a year being out in public,
well,
dating someone?
She does kind of say, she's like, you wear the same thing to bed. You play basketball at like the gross
at the,
YMCA.
At the stinky Y.
Yeah. And he's just like, yeah, I like it there.
Yeah.
And so like, he's not doing things. It looks like he's not dressing extravagantly, but he's never letting on that he has all this money because he's living.
It's very coincidental. The day before they leave,
right
after a year, is the one time someone spots it. So I'm just saying this does stretch it, but it's, you give it a pass because it's so well written.
It also helps that it's early in the movie.
Yeah.
Like it's like,
yeah.
It's easier to give a movie a pass if the coincidence is at the beginning of the movie instead of something that resolves a conflict.
It sets the whole thing off, and then, it's great.
So, and I do like where he kind of explains, he's just like, yeah, I haven't been, like, it's not like, I haven't lied to you.
No.
But I also
been there
haven't,
a year,
I haven't
like,
been completely, like.
And the first class flight was great in terms of, like, it's not even, like,
it's.
It's beyond first class.
Like, if there's a class above first class, this is it.
They're in like a little pod.
I'm guessing this airline's a sponsor, and this is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
Because,
the
wow.
chairs lie flat. Yeah. Like, we actually, we're sending Crystal's grandparents to Korea next month. Her grandfather is a Korean War vet and was going on about how...
Please don't give him a weapon.
No. He was going on about how, like, he'd really like to go back to Korea and see the places that he saw now. And I was like, there's got to be a way. I mean, I know there's a way. You put him on a plane. But I'm like, there's got to be a
tour or a service
something.
Or something.
So I looked it up, and there's actually the Korean government has a plan where, like, they welcome back the vets. They pick up a good chunk of the cost. And then they have like these tours that you can take where you can see the battlefields, and they have like a ceremony for them. Like they're like,
well, and also like they're, I'm sure that they're kind of appreciative of United States veterans. Like they
apparently
Steve is from South Korea, right?
I can't say I really know a whole lot about it.
When did you come over here?
I came over here when I was 3 months old, so 1984.
Okay.
Yeah, and all I know about Korea is what I saw on MASH, which was really about the Vietnam War, right? Like, it's technically the Korean War, but they were really talking about Vietnam,
right?
You know? And so, yeah, I kind of had the same reaction. I'm like, oh, wow, it's so unusual to have us to have gone and fought a war in a country and then be glad
come
that
on
we
back.
Were there. Like, you don't hear that story very often. I was surprised.
I hope it's not a trap.
Yeah. And so...
we got him!
But so when we were researching flights, like, we did come across a flight like that, because I think it's like a 14-hour flight
sure,
or something.
Sure.
And I was just like, yeah, they don't need to... I'll pay a little extra so they have some more leg room.
But they don't need that.
They don't need chairs that lie flat and turn into beds.
Turn into a bed.
This airline,
and their own silk pajamas.
Yeah, this airline was the airline they used every time they fly, which was 3 or 4 times. Like, clearly they were giving them some money to advertise, and they're a real airline. Like, it's very evident. Not in a bad, like, obnoxious, like Mark Wahlberg picking a Bud Light up and fighting a Transformer going, oh, Bud Light, so refreshing. Yeah. But, like, you knew this was a real thing, and this was the first insight into the lives of the quote unquote crazy rich Asians, where I'm just like, oh my God. Like, you know, I'm trying to find a seat next to the person I'm with and I'm crowded in there.
Yeah.
And these rooms, and Rachel does a great job of being like, she doesn't know how to handle it either. And she's the audience surrogate. Like, we are experiencing this world through her, which it works very well.
Yeah. And he plays it off that his dad does business with this airline.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we got a free little, you know,
which could be very, but I don't think he's lying. He's rich, but I think that his family does
do business. Like, I don't think, I've been saying that's how he kind of downplays
it. It's a white lie.
It's a lie by omission.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Which, as we all know, is still a lie.
Do they get to keep those pajamas?
You have to, right? Like, you don't want to give
you're
those
wearing
back.
Them,
so do they have to, like, give them their sizes in advance? Or
probably.
Like,
or no, maybe when you're there, you request probably like a medium.
They were sitting there. They were there in the room when they showed up.
Hey. Crazy rich.
Right.
So what do you think? When you're that wealthy, that's when you go through the metal detector.
Oh, it's a size detector.
It's also a size detector.
It's size.
They're, scanning
it. Checks your inseam. Make sure you're all right.
They're also checking your BMI.
Hey, when they're doing those pat downs,
that's
they're actually measuring you.
Yeah.
And only the crazy rich Asians get the pajamas.
All I can think of that is that Friends episode where he's like, "No, they're supposed to do that, right?" And they're just like, "No,
in prison."
Yeah. So they go to Singapore and they meet up with.
They're greeted by
Nick's best friend and who like the fiance I thought was American. She definitely looked more.
She's obviously mixed I was having trouble too, because in certain scenes, and I'm not trying to be racist or anything, but it's like she must be mixed, because I thought, oh, is he marrying a white woman? Like, as that part of the plot.
Yeah.
But then she looked Asian as she was dressed differently and her makeup was different. And so I had the exact same thought. And Steve, can you give some insight into, I mean, believe it or not, this movie with an all Asian cast of sorts is getting flack because they're not Asian enough, and she may be one of the issues. Do you know
her? I'm not sure about. I know Henry Golding kind of got some he plays Nick.
Okay.
He got some flack because apparently they don't consider him, like, I guess Asian enough, because
he's clearly British, right?
Yeah, he's a British and Singaporean descent, I guess.
Okay.
But then
he's
playing part of a Chinese.
Yeah.
He's playing a Chinese person, basically.
Ah, so different. Yeah.
And and I think Awkwafina also got a little flack or something.
Who
too.
Is that?
She's a comedian.
Okay.
She always plays
her
a more
before.
She always plays kind of a, she speaks with, like, I don't know if you take Ebonics. No, she's always like playing a kind of a
kind of street.
Street, yeah. She's always.
Okay.
Did you watch Future Man on Hulu?
No.
Which is an amazing comedy created by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's such a funny show.
Got, what's his name, right?
Yes.
The guy from Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, him too. But what's his name's also.
Also, what's his name?
hilarious show. But she works in a video game store. It's about video games and nerd culture. And this guy plays a video game and then actually becomes like this future warrior based on this game. And Paul Scheer and Awkwafina work at the video game store.
Okay. Okay.
They have a good back and forth. But the only thing that kind of threw me off, speaking of Golding, who I thought he was great, I thought he was charismatic, I really liked him, but I'm like, okay, when are they going to explain why he has a British accent?
So, but
I took it because they lived in London. They do. They talk about how they send this world. I hate to say they, it sounds, but like they being the crazy rich people.
Yeah.
They send so many of their kids to boarding school in London, and like they're always going to London. And don't forget the opening scene of the movie, they're buying a hotel in London.
Yeah, right.
No, that's great, because I talked to Steve about it too, because I'm like, I was just, when I first heard him speak, I'm like, I need an explanation, because I'm like, he is British. Like, the accent's there, so they've got to at least explain it. So that's good that they work it out.
Yeah.
And a lot of the characters in this movie have a British accent.
I got to tell you,
which
that helped. Like, I was like, okay, so they do give different characters different accents, and it helped me remember who they were and where they're from.
Yeah.
Right. So like Nick,
the movie throws a lot of people at you.
Lots of people
really fast.
Yeah, they go through the here's the family, and it's all the crazy, like, them and their environment where they work and live.
Right. So like your main kid, like obviously Rachel doesn't have an accent. She's from America.
Right.
Nick has a British accent. His best friend has a British accent.
His sister has a British accent.
Yeah, so like, but his mom doesn't.
No.
Michelle Yeoh doesn't.
Which would make sense because she didn't grow up
back,
in,
right?
Yeah.
The grandmother doesn't.
Mm-hmm, that makes sense.
The aunts don't. Like, they all have an Asian accent. Mm. So like, it helps to remember who people are, because there are so many characters. Like, you've got uncles and you've got sisters and you've got cousins. And
you're saying you couldn't remember based on their look?
I didn't say that. That's you putting whatever you want to put on me. Like, that's don't put your racism on me.
I'm not the one that said I needed accents. I was wondering why you couldn't remember based on their look.
I'm saying, like, because there are so many, they throw so many people at you so quickly.
Yeah.
With the exception of like your main characters who you spend most of this movie with.
Yeah.
Then there, like Steve said, there's a scene with the best friend and Nick where they're on like a raft, and that felt more natural of those two dudes talking than anything I've seen recently. Like, yeah, that felt so like they had been friends for years.
Yeah.
I thought this entire cast was wonderful.
There's not a critique I can make about
the one forced one is Ken Jeong. I just, maybe it's because he's a little much. I really feel like he's a bit over the top even for this role and for
this
world.
Would you say he's a little much?
Yeah.
Much.
Yeah.
But I would also say it makes sense it makes sense in context of of Awkwafina.
When you look at Awkwafina,
right, it makes she makes sense.
The casting
that he would be her dad.
Yes, no, the casting made sense.
I think the thing that really didn't like about Ken Jeong in this movie is how they introduce him. Because they introduce him,
I thought that was super racist.
Asian stereotype.
It's like a really big Asian stereotype.
But it was him doing it.
Hang on. So
to Joe, I just
But they introduce him as this really big Asian stereotype, and then he walks it back like, haha, like, no, I was just being silly. But like, she's friends with that character. Like, shouldn't she know kind of already what the deal is with her dad?
I don't think they know she didn't know Nick's parents, and she's
But that's her friend. Like, that she didn't just, well, it's the character's name, Peeklin. Am I saying that right? I don't remember. Well, Awkwafina's character. But that's her friend.
Right.
She didn't just,
like, they went to school together.
She didn't just meet her.
Right. I wonder if she was sent and had like a host family. I don't know this family ever.
I would just think that if you were close enough with somebody to go stay in their house, you would know that their dad
is American. Is he American? He's not American, is he?
I couldn't tell if the character was. He said he went to Cal State.
Yeah, he said he went to study in America.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
But lost his accent completely. Because he has an American accent. Yeah. He's not doing
right. He has
He
drops the joke,
These are very petty criticisms.
Like we've talked on the previous show. I can't remember the last time we had a good, smart romantic comedy. Yeah. Like, it's been so long that you forget that this is what they're supposed to be.
I almost have to go back to like 500 Days of Summer, which is still like not even a straight ahead romantic comedy. I mean, it's it's a very high concept.
Yeah.
I like the one with, now I'm getting, who's our Antoine Yelkin and
Crazy Stupid Love?
No.
I like that one.
That is very good.
Yes. Crazy in Love or Crazy. Anton Yelkin, and I can't remember the British actress that he's with in that, but I really like that one.
Crazy Stupid Love is
Stupid Love is one of the best of modern times.
That's a brilliant flick
as
well.
I would say maybe that is the next one on this level.
Most recent,
But anyway, to get past these silly, we should just get into the story.
Yeah, so like they go to Singapore and they have that great scene where they're eating street food and they're doing whatever, which I gotta tell you, looked delicious.
I know, I got hungry.
And you know, obviously...
I hate these kind of scenes.
Oh, really?
Because I'm so unadventurous from a culinary standpoint that I'm just like, this isn't making me want to eat. This is just like, yep, that's a lot of food.
That's a lot of food.
You also know how crazy stupid rich they are, because the amount of food could feed a small country.
Yeah, but it's street food.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, but four people don't buy that much food anywhere unless you're rich. Like, that was they had a spread.
Asian inspired food is some of my favorite. Like, it is when you get like good, authentic food like that.
You're not talking about the Americanized buffet. You're talking about the little hole in the wall.
Still good.
Oh, yes. Yes. Don't get me wrong.
Don't get me wrong.
But you mean like the hole in the wall that makes the best,
yes,
more like.
Yeah, we have a place down in the city that, yeah, is like in this tiny corner of a strip, yeah, mall. And
they're making the real stuff.
It's good stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, so then they're going to this party that they're also, Nick is kind of a dick.
He is?
In the fact that he's taking Rachel, who has never met anybody in his family, to this massive party, and yeah, they're just like, good luck, babe.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, there's a lot of people there, and it's not just the family. Because I thought at first, I'm like, okay, I get it, they have a big family, but when the entire mansion is filled up, I'm like, yeah, what? And he's, yeah, like, yeah, they invited a few people.
A few people, like, yeah. I do so she goes and sees Awkwafina, who was her friend from school, and I do like where she's got that dress. And Awkwafina's just like, what are you doing? She's like, you can't wear that. She's like, but I thought red was a lucky color. And she was like, no. And they, you know, they good montage of like, you know, Ken Jeong trying to get in the room, like Awkwafina kind of pushing him out. And she comes out in this stunning. I don't think this is that scene. That was later.
No, like this is when she just gives her a dress from her closet.
Yeah.
That was the wedding dress. But then Awkwafina is just dropping her off, and Nick invites her in. She's like, "Oh no, I can't." He's
like, "Yeah, that's a great scene."
Like, she's like, "Oh, okay, I'll go."
And she opens her trunk, and she's got
five different cocktails
and bags.
Yeah,
like they're just like ready to go.
And nice shoes.
And then Rachel's like, "Did you have that like planned?" And she was just like, yeah,
I'm not a savage or whatever. I'm not an animal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Awkwafina, and I know that she could be seen as like the female equivalent, like the Ken Jeong. Like, she can be a bit much, but I think she's funny.
I really used her perfectly.
Yeah. I really didn't think I would like her based on what I saw in the previews. She just seemed really, I don't know.
Stereotyped or something.
But once I saw her in the movie, I thought she was actually great.
Yeah. I think she's funny. Like, I've seen her in other stuff and her comedy. Like, she's just, I don't know, something about her. She's really quirky and funny. But yeah, I think she played up this family
It's weird that like I liked her in the context of the movie, but like, yeah, she was all over the marketing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the radio spot, I think, because I heard the radio spot tons, and I mean, she's probably got like three of her lines are in a 30-second spot.
That's what appeals to the masses, though, is the problem.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm just saying, it's not.
What's her popularity level, though?
In
context of this movie, is she like the cast of this movie? Is she probably one of the more recognizable Asian celebrities?
Because none of them really are. Yes. But you know what I mean?
Michelle, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, it's a different kind of popularity.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, Ken Jeong is the most recognizable. I didn't even know he was in this movie.
Until he shows up.
But yeah, he would be the most recognizable in the comedy world. And then I think her probably, if you know comedy and watch
sure,
a lot, but,
sure.
But yeah, I think it worked well. But yeah, she goes to this party and she's introduced to the mother, who instantly, and we know the mother from talking
instantly.
The mother talks to the friends earlier, and where this tweet goes, you know, this message goes around the world.
Yeah,
what happens is
Nick and Rachel are in a cafe. Somebody sees them. She sends a message. She's like, "I just saw Nick, whatever his last name is,
with some girl."
And then all of a sudden, I liked the graphic.
Yeah.
Of them like sending tweets or texts.
I liked how they incorporated the tweets.
Yeah,
it was very stylized, and I didn't expect it, but it really set up for the tone of the movie, which the tone was not like anything else. This movie had a very unique.
It's hard to believe that this is the director who gave you anyone know
Harold and Kumar.
Jim and the Holograms.
Ooh, oh, wow. No, I would have never.
Okay, so
I thought
this was the guy from Harold and Kumar.
No, I think he's got a similar name.
It's John Chu. That's the guy from Harold. It's the guy who directed this is John Chu.
Yeah.
And I thought that's what the guy's name was.
This is director of Justin Bieber's Never Say Never tour.
Hey. Let's see.
Jim and the Holograms, Blumhouse's biggest failure.
Yeah.
Wow, he's directing In the Heights, the Lin-Manuel Miranda, his first musical that's going to go into a movie.
I think it's John M. Chu.
Yeah,
that is this guy.
It's
yes,
the M
true.
Is the distinction.
Now You See Me Too.
Ooh.
Step Up 3D.
Are
step
you
up
thinking of John Cho, the actor?
That's what his name is. Yeah.
I just
watched Better Luck Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And he's
love
in that
movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Yeah,
we'll get into that.
Yeah, but there might be something that comes up later about that. But anyway, so
he's got a video. I saw. I don't know where it was. Like it was an. It was almost like an ad that was running in the middle of another article, and I got totally sucked into it. And which I never do.
Those will get you.
Yeah, but it was like a 4-minute clip of him breaking down how they filmed.
This scene?
This scene where they go to the mansion for the first time.
It's a beautifully shot scene.
And it's like, it's almost all CGI. Like,
really?
No. None of it's real.
No
and
way.
They're like, he's like, we found an old mansion, and he's like, and it was disgusting and covered in bird crap, and he's like, so we had to clean it up just on the, like, on the outside, and then he's like, the like all the bushes and stuff for CGI and the long driveway.
I wondered because it was good, but I'm like, that camera work looked a little like something
about
it. And
they were trying to establish that, like, you know, like in Singapore, like that would be like ridiculous because like you don't have that much land.
Yeah, the land. I was
to have that much land there. And they actually filmed in Malaysia is what he said.
Okay.
But it was just really interesting watching all the work that went in, like even down to like the labels on her thing, on her clothes. He goes, we shot all that, we got back and he couldn't read a damn thing.
Oh no.
And he's like, so we had to CGI all the labels so you could see the clubbing, whatever.
Oh really?
Like that. Like, he's like, none of that was visible.
Dang.
And he's like, and then
cool.
And then
good for him though. Like it's seamless.
Good CG.
Yeah. You did that. That's how CGI should be used. Right?
Like, it should be used to enhance and not be noticeable.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they go to this party. They meet
the mom.
Rachel meets the mom, Michelle Yeoh, and it is it is the most contentious meeting where, like, you can tell that she is not
she's
happy.
Being fake nice
super and like
for a second
and Rachel doesn't pick up on it. I felt like she didn't pick up on it at all, but then
she goes, she hates me.
Yeah. Like Rachel played into it perfectly, and then they walked out and she was like, she hates me.
Yeah.
But like Michelle Yeoh, who I mean, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I think she's on Star Trek Now, like Star Trek Discovery, not Star Trek Now. Like it's, she plays this part
She's great.
Like she is super not pretentious isn't the word. Passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Like and it is
that's the word.
Expertly done, expert level passive aggressiveness.
Yes. Now I want to ask about this, and Steve, maybe you can give some insight into the culture. I mean, obviously there's two things at play here. There's the rich aspect where it's like in any culture you get the stereotypical, like, I don't want you to marry someone beneath us, our family comes from money and we're lawyers and doctors and all this stuff. But then you've also had the Asian culture, which, you know, from what I know of it, that a lot of times the parents want their kids to marry another, you know, similar, someone from a similar background. So these two things are mixed together here. I mean, is this very, from what you know, I mean, is this very stereotypical of a, or typical, I'm sorry, of an Asian?
Yeah, there are several cultures, like Asian cultures, that don't really welcome outsiders, you know, and she makes it a point, the mother makes it a point to be like, you're American.
Yeah, which I thought was...
Did Michelle Yeoh say that?
Yeah.
Or was it the... Oh, you're right, she does. They have that like little sit down. Yeah, yeah. Okay,
she says, you look Asian, like you're
mean Rachel's mom.
Michelle Cho,
Nick Young's
Michelle,
mom.
Nick's mom.
But doesn't Rachel kind of have that conversation with her mother as well, where she's just like, you look the part, but, and like she kind of points to her head, like her
brain.
Yeah,
I think she did say
like,
something
but,
like
but
that.
But in here, you're not.
She did say that, yeah. But the mom like calls her out on it, and I thought that was fascinating because that was my other question. Is it's like, wow, I mean, Rachel looks Asian. She is Asian American.
She speaks Japanese,
and she is able to speak the language, or at least one of the languages, but the mom sees her as American, and I thought, wow, is it really that much of a divide of you're not Asian enough, you know, like you're not true Asian? I just never even thought about that discrepancy.
I mean, I could see it. There's plenty of Americans who feel the same way about foreigners here.
Yeah.
So,
kidding, brother.
We didn't invent it. We just perfected it.
I just thought that was really eye-opening.
And I think I think ultimately they look down on America. Like they look at America as like fat and lazy and weak and dumb and obsessed with stupid stuff. And
is the idea that, so Nick has left, like he's gone home, but he's gone to the States and he's kind of stayed away too long.
Oh, she probably also resents her because she's kept him there for a year, which
is that a thing though? Like, do they, in that culture, do they expect sons to come home and then take over? So like the idea that he'd been gone for so long?
Yeah, from what little I know, it seems like something that would fall within the lines of some of those cultures.
I guess you have more responsibility to...
Well, it is the family
business.
Yeah. They send you to go to school.
I mean, but
they
if you think about that, like that's a pretty common trait in a lot of cultures. I mean, think about It's a Wonderful Life, right? Like, yeah. that's the storyline of It's a Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart wants to go away to college, but he has to take over the business, and that's what sons do.
Yeah.
And you know, so I think that's
that makes sense.
I think that's a pretty common thing, and I think it's something you see less of in our culture now,
right?
Because honestly, there's a lot fewer business owners. Like, there's a lot fewer small businesses. Because if you think about even It's a Wonderful Life, the idea of like, oh, my family owns a bank.
Right.
And not only does my family own a bank and now I got to take over a bank, but we own a bank and we're poor.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like that, that part of It's a Wonderful Life in today's culture would make no sense.
Even own, like, I guess do they have like small banks anymore?
They do, but they're pretty. I mean, I bank at one,
far between.
But yeah, I bank called St. John's Bank.
I guess mine's a credit union, so.
And yeah, and it's owned by a family that's owned it since like I think the 20s. But that's unusual.
Yeah,
most of
it's
them have
like
been gobbled
Bank of
up.
America or U.S. Bank,
right?
And...
So, but I think that notion of like, no, the son comes home and takes. You got to do what's right for the family and the business, and
yeah,
you know.
Okay. They meet back up, and Nick is going to go with his friend to the bachelor party, and the fiance of Nick's best friend invites Rachel to her bachelorette party. And Rachel, like, I do like where she's just super timid. Like, she's kind of intimidated by this whole life.
And you would be.
And you would be. Like,
she's such a great, sweet person. I feel so bad for her all the time, because I'm like, you know, first of all, with the mom, which I get it. The mom is just automatically, you know, she's an outsider. She's from a different whatever. But it's like, Rachel's so sweet and likable and trying her best. And it's hard to watch. And this is definitely a trope of the romantic comedies.
Yes.
Like we said, they don't stray away from the cliches.
They lean into the tropes, which is good.
Yeah. But it's like, oh man, it's hard to watch because, you know, the actor is so good and it's so well written, and you can't help but to feel sorry for her and root for her the whole time.
So Nick goes to his bachelor party, and it's put on like they have invited like the Stifler of this movie. Like, I don't know what else to describe
the douche.
Him as.
Every friend has that well-meaning but douche.
I don't think this guy's well-meaning. He's just a douche.
Oh, he spent all his money and threw this bachelor party for his friend.
Yeah. Did he do it for his friend or have fun for himself?
I agree, but I think he's well-meaning, but he's selfish and he's a douche. But I still feel like he's just that friend. We all know people like that.
Right.
Like,
I mean, I'm just saying, if I ever get married and you guys throw me a bachelor party, you should get a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that?
Yeah, well, on it. Yeah. You got it, buddy.
And now we're on a list.
Do you have any crazy rich Asian friends we can talk to?
I unfortunately don't. I'll work on that.
Okay, yeah, please.
And we're really more concerned about the crazy rich aspect, just to be clear.
Yeah, true. Yeah. We'll take that over.
That's way more important.
Yeah. Let's be clear.
This guy reminded me of Clark Green.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Who's Clark Duke.
Clark Duke?
From... The
Office?
Oh, that's
Clark Duke. Yeah.
His character's name was
Clark.
Clark
and Michael fame. He used to live with Michael, Sarah, and do all the shorts and stuff.
Oh, really?
Really good friends, yeah.
Okay.
Clark and Michael was their web short. It was
okay.
Funny. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was on Silicon Valley.
Clark Duke?
Clark Duke on Silicon Valley would have been brilliant.
Because, he is in Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Doesn't he play, who plays his dad?
Oh.
Is it Rob Corddry?
They find out
they
that he's his dad or
his dad.
Something.
Yeah.
Like
he hooks up with his mom in the past.
Those movies, the first movie.
First
movie's
great.
The second one's awful.
Yeah,
but the first one is great.
They couldn't even get Chevy Chase, right? So
no,
they just
it was
like
John
wrote
Cusack.
Him out. No, they had Adam Scott come in for the second
one.
No,
it was John Cusack.
John Cusack was kind of filling the Adam Scott
role. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, he was. Yeah. So in the first one, it was John Cusack. And the second one, they brought in Adam Scott.
Yeah.
So, I thought Chevy Chase didn't do it though either, or he did like one line in the beginning or something.
I'm trying to
remember. Chevy Chase phoned in something in that second movie where they had like.
Well, when you think phoning something in, Chevy Chase is your guy.
exactly. But that first one doesn't have any right to be as awesome as it is.
It does not. It's great.
It is fantastic. Yeah. But anyway, so they throw these bachelor parties, and like the guy one is the typical of what you'd imagine. A stupid bachelor party, but with crazy rich
money. But they
it's
got
on
like
a,
you know the Miss
barge
Miss Universe
or something.
Or
they go to international waters.
Yeah,
that's great.
I do like he was like, what was the joke about international waters? Like he makes a joke. He was like, I just want to punch you in the face. And he was like, well, you were in international waters, so it doesn't matter.
But it's like this whole like tanker that's been rented out, and it's a party and a dance floor and the lights and a DJ.
I guess it's Miss Universe. I don't know who they, because they had gals. And it, I will say, there are almost no other races in this movie.
I thought this was fantastic. Another kudos to them for making an American movie with an all Asian cast and not casting, oh, we need that token white.
Well, you had the people in the band and you had the people, the girls on the thing. And that was it.
I saw like a bartender that was white.
Yeah, but I mean, but they don't have that token white friend of the family, quote unquote, that's famous to like, oh, Adam Scott's in this movie.
Well, I think they almost made it that way. Ooh. I thought there was... Originally, they were going to try and...
Scarlett Johansson was going to be her.
They were going to try and make it to where Rachel was white.
Oh.
And the author
was like... Oh, so she could be a real outsider?
Yeah, and he's like, that's not a story we're telling here. Like,
we're not doing that one.
Good luck with that one. But we'll be called Crazy Rich Asians.
No, I'm just glad. I really props to them for making this movie and not doing that, because it's really easy to try to get a name in there for the American audience.
Right.
And,
it's the safe play.
Yeah. Sure. And I thought that was fantastic, because I kept waiting and I could hardly spot one white person and it wasn't a problem. I'm like, good for them for not shoehorning in.
It would be weird.
All diverse.
It would be weird.
Yeah.
So they, there's,
I think,
kind
the biggest
of,
white role is probably the guy she beats at poker in the opening scene.
That's, that's probably true. That's probably true. So all of Nick's cousins are kind of railing on him about Rachel.
Yeah.
And he has had enough of it.
Oh, they are douches.
These people are super douches. You know, they think she's a gold digger. They think, you know, and
they, like, to his face are like being, I mean, I don't know,
they're
drinking,
make fun of
but
her boobs like, to his face. And at that point, he stands up.
Like, you're like, son of, like, the only thing she's good at is, oh, small boobs.
They were like, what does she bring to the... To
not
the,
boobs.
And the guy
boobs.
Is like, small boobs.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And then...
I would have... I mean, he goes
he
to
gets
punch
up.
Him, like...
He gets up and goes to get him, and then the buddy kind of... The groom kind of pulls him away. Yeah. And the most ridiculous thing of this whole thing is the fact... So the best friend and Nick kind of fly away.
Yeah.
Like, literally, they steal a helicopter.
Yeah. And I do like where he goes, boy, those piloting lessons sure came in handy. And like,
but was he in the Army or something? I thought it was from being in the Army.
I thought they referenced that he was in the military. That's how
he is military, I think.
Okay, that makes more. I did not hear that part.
I picked that up earlier, because when he said pilot whatever training, I think it was because
he just stole a helicopter.
Yeah.
No, it made sense. I mean,
but yeah, they're sitting on this little, like, on this little barge, and they're having some beers, and I guess they're watching rugby. And Nick kind of, it says, he's like, I'm going to propose. Like, I'm going to, like, this is it. She's the girl that I want to marry. And then the best friend doing
who's
what
been great the whole time.
But he's doing what a best friend does, where he's just like, look, man, have you told her about what she's getting herself into?
Yeah.
And
well,
and
also
makes Nick think about it.
Well, he also brings up some very valid points.
He does.
About like your plan, not even your expectations of that the family has for you. But like this point. His plan is supposed
to come back here,
to come back and run the business. She clearly has a very thriving career, back in New York. So it's like, you can't just,
this
that's
is
not like one works in New York and one works in LA, like that, which is still
it's
problematic,
a
but like, yeah. And so
one's in, yeah, he's Nick's family's business is in Singapore and she's in New York.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like the dude's not being realistic.
Oh, no, not at all.
And I will say, one of my complaints about the movie is, even though it gets its happy ending,
it
never really addresses that issue.
It doesn't at all. Well, I think he says, he's like, we'll just go to New York. He's like, they basically say that Nick is willing to walk away
from
it all.
Well, he's willing to, but I got the vibe that he wasn't going to have to.
Right.
Yeah.
But
he's still going to have
to figure this out.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess when you have that much money, though, you can be like, look, no, it's cool. We'll rent a place in Manhattan.
He doesn't. I mean,
he does now.
But if he's going to take over,
but we know he's not.
But I know. But if he walked away, he would.
Oh, sure.
But if he walked away, then they wouldn't have the issue of how are they going to handle this.
Yeah.
You know. So if he stays, he'll have the money, but then they'll have the issue.
Right.
Yeah. So he has his cake and eats it too in the end.
Yes.
It's a happy ending.
Yeah. And then we go to the bachelorette party.
His wedding cake.
Hey. And we think that this woman, who we find out to be Nick's ex-girlfriend, is on Rachel's side, and it is very obvious. From the first time we meet her, you can tell there's a little bit of contention between the two. You don't know why.
It's funny. As soon as I saw her, I just assumed she was an ex-girlfriend.
I thought as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Like, I was just talking to him.
I think they set it up to, I mean, this, and it's a trope. It's the, I used to date the guy you're with now, and I'm going to be nice to you, but.
And I'm of this world, so I'm where he should be.
Yeah. But right. Done very well. And God, it just, they are so mean to her. It's just one of those.
They're passive aggressive to her.
Yeah.
Where like they're laying on the table, like the massage table, and, the ex-girlfriend kind of starts saying some things.
Yeah, you know, we used to date, right?
Right, and she was just like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, for like 2 years.
Yeah, right.
And then they got a fish.
And then, you know, so like, but I do, it's interesting to see, like, that was the plan the whole time. Like, they're baiting her, and then finally, she gets up and she walks away, and then she goes into her room, and there's this gutted fish, and they, they call her a gold digger.
Terrible.
And but then we should say that, like, Nick's cousin
sister. I will also say, though,
is that a sister?
Why you would greet someone like that with skepticism.
Sure.
When you have that kind of money.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know? I mean I feel
like you should be guarded, but obviously the way they handled it is not
absolutely like I'm not, but I do get why they'd be like,
would be
okay
on, sure.
Like,
is that his,
it's a sister, I'm pretty sure. Isn't the British model is his sister?
I thought it was his cousin.
Astrid? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
I think they're cousins.
Yeah. Oh, cousins?
They don't ever talk about his sister, because...
Okay.
Do they?
I figured it was just a younger sister.
No, I thought it was... Yeah, okay. Astrid, who's like the most gentlest, kindest person ever.
And her side story is that she has a husband that's in the same position as Rachel, where he does not come from money, but he married into it, and he has to deal with all the cousins and fame and everything. Right. And he feels very emasculated by the fact that she
has all this money.
She buys whatever she wants, and she hides it all the time.
I mean, she bought $1.2 million earrings at cost, and it was nothing for her to drop.
She was just like, that's cool.
She's a model. She's like a supermodel and rich and has to hide all the things. And so he's starting a startup. But as soon as he came home and had to shower after a business meeting, I'm like, well, clearly he's having an affair.
Yeah,
like, it just fits into the.
But also, like, it's. Did that need to be there? Like, that was the one thing where I was man. Like, that's the.
I liked the movie. I also wish he had taken the Netflix deal.
Oh, really?
There's a lot of story here.
True. Yeah,
sure. I would like to see more of it.
Yeah.
And, and honestly, like, I get why he didn't take the next Netflix deal. I think it was very...
Do you think he can make more, he's
smart,
gonna make more money
move,
here?
Yes.
I don't know that he will, but I think it was noble of him. I mean, he was like, there's something about seeing... our culture on a movie screen, like, and I want that for, my heritage. But but I also think that ultimately this might be served better as a television show.
Maybe.
There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of story. And
haven't even talked about the gay cousin.
Yeah. I mean,
like,
there's so much going on. And I will say that nothing feels even though there's a lot going on, I don't necessarily, I never felt like I was confused or lost.
It never feels like that, but 2 hours feels too long for a rom-com.
Yeah. But
this should have been like 140.
But it also feels like there's so much story that, like, it would be nice to have more
they
of
had
it.
To develop.
It wasn't in a bad way.
Right.
It never was like, this is too crazy, too packed, too crowded. But again, like, for this story, it was too much for one movie.
It's a very richly drawn world.
Yes.
With a lowercase.
It's like a shame to only get 2 hours of it.
Yeah, and so it's like, because there's like you can tell that, and I don't know if it's like this in the book or if the guy just had kind of mapped out the world because he knew it so well. You could really see that there's a lot of backstories and connecting points from character to character.
Right,
like character A connects to B and B connects to C, but then you can also see how C connects back to A.
Yeah, right,
and so and I think. That would really work well in a television show. So clearly,
maybe
we're going to get another one of these movies.
Absolutely,
after this,
after a doubling its tracking, which they were still happy with the tracking, and it did even better. But I wouldn't be surprised at some point
this goes to TV
if they either reboot this as a TV show or move it.
Big Fat Greek Wedding. That's what that did.
And that works so well.
Yeah.
Right.
I will say that I think this was such a smart move, not just from a financial standpoint, which I think it probably will in the long run make him more money. But also, when you make a television show, especially on Netflix, you're just a Netflix show.
Right.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, it could be
great.
Which
is why I said no.
There's some great Netflix shows,
absolutely.
But then you're just wrote, you know, oh, it's a Netflix show. That's even looked down upon. But for
Netflix is running into some issues right now where a lot of the shows are getting mad at Netflix because they're really good at production deals, but they're not really good at marketing. And
they just canceled Joel McHale's show and Michelle Wolf's show got canceled.
Right. And so it's like they haven't figured out how to market these shows. So if your show happens to break out and it's Orange is the New Black or whatever, but they're so focused on content production that they're not good at marketing their shows. Yeah. So like One Day at a Time is having a lot of issues because One Day at a Time is like, why aren't you pushing us for Emmys? Because One Day at a Time, I don't know if you watch it or not.
No.
It's a straight ahead, 3-camera laugh track sitcom, but it's also a really good one. And it's something you can watch with the kids, but it isn't like for little kids. And it's really well done. But nobody knows it's there.
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of it.
No. This is the reboot of
One Day at a Time from the 70s, early 80s with Valerie Bertinelli.
Yes.
And it's really well done, but they like nobody's talking about it, and it's a shame because it's a really good show.
Yeah, they doubled Netflix is. I mean, in recent they've doubled down on Orange is the New Black. They doubled down on House of Cards when they did. Which, by the way, did you see his movie made $126? That Kevin's
very sad for everyone else involved.
It is awful.
I mean, I know a lot of people,
but they got paid.
When you put your heart and soul into a project, I mean, you want nominations. You want people to say, oh, this is a great movie. Oh, yeah, I worked on it's just sad for everyone else.
$126.
Yeah.
But
I don't like to just poo-poo on a project like that because I know there's hundreds of people.
It's not just obviously, there's more people involved.
There's years of production before he even gets hired. It's just sad for whoever wrote it.
I'm just saying, like, I've never seen a movie make $126 that has that level of a cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, the Marvel stuff kind of has a mind of its own. Like, that's got its own brand.
Let's get back into this one. Yeah, we got a bit to go.
Yeah.
So my other point was, though, but being in the movie theater and making this a movie, this is introducing American audiences to an all-Asian cast in this, you know, this world, which is very rare. And we'll get it in our video recovery, which I have since Dan's not here.
Right.
I'm going to talk about another movie that did this before far as an all-Asian cast to the mainstream. But you don't see this a lot, and I think this is a great move going forward
to
show that well-written, rich characters can be Asian. They don't have to be white, you know, and that's the problem.
I could see this being a movie we were where was it? I can't remember if it was actually in the episode last time. We were talking about The Outsiders.
Yeah
And I could see this being kind of like The Outsiders.
I could see that for
in
sure.
10 or 15 years. It's gonna be like, that's a lot of people.
I said from the get that Danny Rand on Marvel's Iron Fist should have been an Asian American. The guy they got is, he's not good.
Yeah,
like, he's super boring, but like, that's a perfect character. That's a perfect role.
Jump into this, you know how long they had to rehearse the fight scenes?
Like 2 weeks.
No, that morning. If you want to know why Iron Fist fight scenes were so bad,
well, hopefully season two is way better.
He came in the morning and they rehearsed the moves to do.
Well, hopefully that season two has gotten its act in gear.
So
anyway, back to this one. She comes home and immediately goes to Nick, and like, it could be a thing where she doesn't say anything to him like that in a traditional rom-com. She just lets it go.
She's mad at him, and he doesn't know why. Yeah.
But she just says right away, and Nick, to his credit, was just like, "Well, okay, how can I help you? Like, what can I do for you?" She's like, "I just want to hang out with you. I just want to spend time alone with you." And he was like, "You got it. Like, whatever you need. Like, I'm so sorry that happened." And they fix that problem in that moment. She obviously still has her doubts about being with him and like this whole situation, but the relationship between her and Nick does not suffer because of it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the fact that they pull that off and they make you still like, there's no conflict between Nick and Rachel that is manufactured.
No. And it's the
conflict.
Like
I said, she has her own doubts about it, but
the conflict is all between Rachel and this world.
Yes.
And especially the family. It's not between Rachel and Nick. They never have that forced issue.
They do at the end. When we get to the end, where all it takes is probably a phone call or a conversation that this could probably get fixed. But I understand Rachel's point of view where she's just like, I don't want anything to do.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not Nick.
That's what I'm saying. Rom-coms are really bad about always introducing conflict between the man and woman. And we talked about conversation can fix it. There never is conflict between them.
Right.
It's her and the family.
Right.
And it's just, there's, he can't say or do anything to make it better.
Right.
It's the world. Right. Right. So,
we get to the wedding.
No, we get to the dumpling making and the mother.
That's true. Oh, okay. And Nick's grandmother takes a shine to
Rachel.
Yeah. Like, she's like, you know, she looks at her face. She's like, you have good bone structure. And
her
she's like, you're very pretty.
Yeah.
About
says,
her nose.
Yeah.
But you could also tell there is animosity between the grandmother and Michelle Yeoh.
Well, you can tell where she gets it from.
Yes.
Because this is where she's like, she's making dumplings. And she's like, that's terrible to the
right.
mother. And so like,
and I do like the scene where Rachel comments on the mother's ring.
I loved in this scene how like, you meet the grandma and you're like, oh,
she's so sweet and nice. Yeah.
And then she's a total bitch.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, that's exactly what my grandma used to do to my mom.
This was
like,
awful.
It's like, I didn't see it. I didn't see it till I was an adult, but like, my grandma was great to me.
Yeah.
Right.
But then she would be so shitty to my mother.
Yeah. It was the opposite. It was a gender swap in my family.
But this is
actually my grandfather didn't like me either, which is fine.
Well, that's
it says my one loved me.
Yeah.
The other one, not so much.
Yeah,
the Italian one wanted nothing to do with me.
But this is when the mom lays it out to her. She's like going to the bath.
We should say that Rachel kind of comments on the ring and how beautiful it was. And Rachel was being completely genuine.
Yeah.
Like she wasn't trying to butter Michelle Yeoh up. She was just commenting on the ring. And then you get this story about the ring that's just like, oh, God, you just can't win.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what she does.
She basically is kind of in the Rachel position. She was where, like, her husband's family considered her an outsider and didn't want her to get married.
Right.
And so she basically is like, I know how this
they do
ends.
A really good double, like a fake out where you think that Michelle Yeoh is going to start siding with.
Right.
You know,
I thought she was going to like be like open up to her
yeah,
after this.
And then
and
immediately
she, lays out,
she was like, you'll never be good enough.
We'll never be good enough.
Yeah.
She's speaking like from experience. I know that. And it's just, it's really hard. And she lays.
She's like, you will not marry Nick.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. So then we kind of flash forward a little bit. Again, Rachel kind of tells Nick what's up. And Nick's like, don't worry about it. Like, I'm with you. Like, I've got your back. Like, we'll deal with that later. So then we get to the wedding. And this is where she comes out and like, so the Oliver, who's this cousin,
very stylish.
He's obviously like a style,
like a
fashion designer or stylist.
Yeah. He's,
we get a montage of Rachel trying on dresses.
Oh, first of all, because it's relevant to this scene, the soundtrack is awesome in this movie.
It's
brilliant. All Asian covers of popular songs.
I hate Coldplay.
That yellow
song
is amazing,
the cover at the end is fantastic.
But the whole thing, though, the title credits, there is an Asian cover of popular music that you would see in a rom-com type of movie.
Yeah.
I'm buying this soundtrack.
Yeah, it was Money. Was a song of Money, That's What I Want. That's the song.
But this scene, the wedding scene, this they do like and, the whole
yeah,
yellow it, song.
Yeah, they do. They no
yellow's.
Yellow's
the
yellow's at the end.
Is not
the end.
Yellow? Which one is the one
they do? Can't Help Falling in Love with You.
But
it's not. It's in English in that scene though.
It is.
Yeah.
No, they couldn't have. Why would they? No.
I'm not sure.
Maybe I just heard it.
It
was an Asian singer.
That would be
weird
if they changed. But either way, they do the whole song and like it's a gorgeous wedding and water flows down. And
well,
she
you've
walks.
Got you've got. So here's the like they
is that the when they're doing the wedding and the water flows down like where the bride walks in is and like. Is that an Asian thing or is that a rich thing?
I think that's a rich.
Oh,
thing.
That's got to be. I've never heard of a rich thing.
You know, because I mean, you would think that the church would have had to have been
was
built
the church.
For that.
It was like a botanical garden.
Yeah, whatever it was. But they do like it's not like they do 2 minutes from the song or whatever. They play the whole thing.
Yep.
And this is an amazing scene.
This one got me a little bit.
People are gonna like you're gonna start seeing things from that wedding scene pop up in weddings,
real,
start flooding
churches.
Knock over the holy water
those,
cauldrons.
Those branches they were all holding that like
oh
lit
God.
Up.
That's
at the
gonna
end.
Be a thing. For
like
sure.
That's totally gonna be a
but
thing.
But they keep cutting to the camera between Nick who's in the wedding and Rachel sitting there and she sees Rachel in her like smiling and talking to this other famous person that's
well,
at the
we should
wedding.
Say that like Awkwafina kind of gives Rachel a pep talk. where she's just like, look, dude, like, you are an economics professor at NYU. Like, you are a badass. And then I do, like, I don't know what the reference was to the chicken, but she was just like, bawk, bawk, bitch.
Yeah.
And then she, and then so, like, as Rachel's going forward with this whole thing, we see that, like, the fiance's mother is, like, also into economics, and she writes this. She wrote this paper.
Oh, that's the fiance's mother?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't tell who that was. I thought she was just a famous.
No, no, no. Like, I think she was the fiance's mother. Oh. And, like, took out, like, a whole row so yeah. nobody would
that
sit
makes
by
even
her.
Better
was she supposed to be
she...
royalty of some kind?
Maybe.
Yeah, I thought they called her, like, a princess. Yeah.
They could be, but, like,
I didn't take it as she was family. That makes it better if
yeah.
she took a shine to her.
I do like how Rachel kind of innocently is like, oh, I guess I'll sit down, and then she realizes who she is.
Yeah.
And then she's like,
this is open seating. Yeah.
Right. And she starts talking to her about the economics paper that yeah. this woman had written. And then Michelle Yeoh, this is the scene where it was bawk bawk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it was on, and then Michelle Yeoh's just like kind of a taken back because Rachel, no fear. Like,
well, they thought
no
she was going to embarrass herself because
right.
that lady didn't want people to
correct.
Bother her.
Correct.
And the lady was kind of snarky to her at first. And then when she realized she knew about economics uh-huh. and they got to talk, and then by the end, she had won her over, and people
yes.
were like, oh, that's
that
not how
work.
That was supposed to play out.
Right. So then the wedding happens, and this was a beautiful scene. Like, it hit me a little bit, like, where they're talking.
The cinematography,
like,
the music, yeah. the camera. I yep. mean, this is an incredible scene.
They're talking to each other, and it's very obvious that even with all of the that's going on outside of them, like,
a lot
it's
of cursing
still,
in this episode.
Sorry. Like, it's still them.
I wouldn't think Crazy Rich Asians rom-com would be the one with five edits. I'm probably not going to get them all. Sorry, folks.
But, like, it's still them. Like, their yeah. relationship is still as strong, and it doesn't matter. They have this beautiful, like, after the you know, party, and they're dancing and all this good
beautiful
stuff.
Beautiful for a little bit,
and then
this is when
and then
drops.
They kind of, Nick's mother pulls him off to the side. They sit down. This was the part that
and
I had
this
a little
also
this
kind
is,
of a head fake too, because don't you think maybe that she's
that's
gonna,
what I
you
thought
think
we were
the mom
doing?
Is coming around now,
right? Yes,
and
the grandmother is there,
and you're probably like, oh, the grandma's told the mom, like, snap out of it, blah,
right?
Blah.
Look at him, look at how happy he is,
and then the grandmother goes full B, like yeah. she flips to the other part because she finds out that, like, this could bring shame to the family.
They hire a private investigator, and this entire time we've been of the impression that Rachel's father had died. They got to America, and her mother built everything from the ground up. It was just Rachel and her mom, because they kind of talk about how they don't like her. They were sitting at, like, making dumplings, and Rachel's just kind of like, I never had this as a kid, so it's beautiful to see. Yeah. You know, whatever. And even, like, this was the part that I had this was the tropey part where I was just like, she never told Rachel. Like, Rachel has no idea her entire life. You figure she's 27 at this
I
point.
Could see that she, I could see she hid that from
maybe,
her daughter.
Yeah,
totally.
Maybe. But then so we find out that
if
Rachel's,
she's embarrassed
Rachel's
or
father
or
is alive.
Yeah. Or it's easier to let her think that
he's dead.
That he's dead.
Because yeah. he's not, like, she has no contact with him. The mom yeah. has no yeah. contact with him. And there's
stuff this happens all the time. Joe.
And so this could have yeah. the trope that they didn't fall into is that Nick turns on her, where she's like, you lied to me. But immediately Nick's like, she wouldn't have done it. If she didn't know it was a thing, I believe that she didn't do
yeah.
it. And he pulls away from his family. Like, the grandmother yeah. grabs his hand, and they say that
yeah,
Nick is her, Nick is her favorite. And Nick is just like,
nope, let go of me.
He's yeah. like, yeah, let go of me. He's like, and the grandmother's like, if you leave now, you'll have nothing. He was like, cool.
Yeah. Nick is a stand up. Never in this movie again do they make that fake, like, oh, he was kind of a douche for doing this,
right?
Like, he is a good guy, and he is from beginning till end.
He never falters.
Yeah,
he never. The cousin's husband, on the other hand,
well, yeah, he's,
you know,
awful.
Like, we, and that's a whole side story that I don't know if they were trying to, like, kind of flesh out Astrid's character, or if they were trying to.
I think it was interesting. It shows how someone, an outsider, would feel, and how the pressure of that can make you break.
I mean, like, the relationship between Astrid and Rachel. You know, like, because Rachel's the only one that Astrid. That's kind of what I was thinking. Is, like,
yeah.
it just gave her. It gave Rachel
had to give
another
someone,
outlet that wasn't Awkwafina and that wasn't Nick.
Yeah.
So
and
now
it,
she's
on
got
the
this
inside,
third.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Rachel kind of takes off, and it's bad. Like, it's not good. And Nick never quits. He calls her, and he was just like, "Please call me back."
At Awkwafina's
family's house
and just
and
not eating, just
super
sleeping,
depressed.
Yeah.
And then her mom shows up, and her mom, she's like, how could you keep that from me? And again, another trope where she could have been just pissed.
Yeah.
And then her mom gives her the reason, where, like, my husband at the time beat the crap out of me, and it was awful, and I confided in this man, and we fell in love. and I got pregnant.
And this was cool too, because like Awkwafina or someone's like, you should call Nick, and then she's like, no, and she's like, he's the one that got your mom.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah,
like that was cool.
Well, like her mom was just Nick brought me out here.
Yeah,
yeah, and I liked, because not only does it establish that he's a good dude, or kind of solidify
yeah,
it,
yeah,
but it also. My first thing when she showed up, and I was like,
how'd she get there?
She's like, didn't she like work at a hotel or something? I'm like, how does she?
Right. Well, I think you're supposed to think Awkwafina's family, who's also wealthy, yeah. flew her out to comfort her. Like, that's yeah. believable. But the yeah. fact that it was Nick, that's the
yeah.
real icing on the cake right. there.
And she kind of says, she's like, I fell in love with that guy and I had to leave. Like, I had, like, if my husband knew what had happened, he would have killed us. He would have killed me. He would have killed you. So I left and I told you what happened, and that's where we are. And Rachel accepts it, which I think is something that I didn't expect.
It should be pointed out too that apparently it's my understanding that this differs from the novel.
Because
In the novel, she basically, Rachel gets pissed at her mom and like blames her for the situation that she's in for lying to her.
Oh.
So.
Ooh.
So I think this plays better though.
Oh yeah, this was nice. You know? All of this is so nicely wrapped up.
I think also like it would have added another 10 minutes to the movie that it didn't need.
Oh, yeah. No,
you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, for sure. So yeah, she gets on, she's like, I'm not calling Nick. Like, it's not, I'm not doing it.
But she does.
And then Nick has a confrontation with his mother where he was, you know, and I don't, like, they're standing out there and Nick kind of says, I was stuck. Like, I don't know, maybe it's the mom that says, what, there's a conversation where Nick's like, either I go with Rachel and I lose my family, or I go with my family and I lose Rachel. He's like, what was I supposed to do? Like, I'm stuck in this contentious spot where I lose. Like, there's no way for me to come out of this ahead. And the mom is just, I think this is the point where the mom's just like, oh, like, I may have just pushed my son.
Yeah,
completely. Like, my actions have just destroyed this relationship. Yeah.
Well, I don't think she'd really realize that until she had the conversation with Rachel.
The mahjong parlor. The mahjong.
Oh, yeah. Which is a wonderful scene.
Yeah, no, this is one of my favorites.
That's the scene.
Yeah. Yes, so real quick. Rachel goes to see Nick. Nick proposes to her, and you don't know if she accepts or not, but she invites Nick's mother to go to the mahjong parlor, and this is a greatly written
scene.
Her monologue with mom
I'm
is
telling,
so
this,
good.
This actress, we're going to see a lot more of her. Like, she was fantastic. Maybe not in the romantic comedy, in anything. She was so good. Yeah. But yeah.
But the writing was good, but her delivery, I mean, she is fantastic, right? That's Constance Wu
is that the actress?
Yeah. So she is fantastic.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
She does this monologue, and I don't understand Mahjong except for what you play on the computer where you match the tiles, but I still was able to follow the fact
I wish they had given us some insight when she flips over the Mahjong tiles, and I was like,
But this is the same scene from Solo where you got that it's like, oh, Han Solo has four, but he has the kicker card.
Right.
Like, I got it, but I didn't understand the game, but I was like, oh, the mom has her. But then Rachel's like, as she's doing this whole monologue, has like the better hand.
She's played her the end.
Even though she thought she won.
It's back to the scene in the beginning.
Yeah.
Where the guy thinks he's got her. He's got Rachel beat.
The foreshadowing was the poker. Absolutely.
Yes.
And so
then Rachel's been playing her the whole
time. I thought that was a great full circle. I thought the monologue was amazing. I thought there's the body language, Michelle Yeoh's facial expression.
Yeah.
This scene is one of my favorites in the movie. After that, I'm like, wow, that is cool.
I absolutely loved the mic drop when Rachel's like,
yes.
You're going to look back 10 years from now or whatever.
Yeah.
When Nick is married to this woman that you want, realize it wasn't because of you. It was because of me making this decision to let him go.
That poor Asian American woman or whatever. No,
that was a great mic drop scene. Absolutely.
Yeah. This monologue is one of my favorites. I don't know if I've seen a better one this year.
So she hits her with that line where she's like, in 15 years, when you're sitting there playing with your kids, looking at, you know, Nick's life, you will remember that it's not because of you, it's because of me that you have this. And then she flips the tiles because
she had won.
Well, like Michelle Yeoh had already flipped her tiles,
right?
And they,
so it's basically like I've
trumped you.
Yeah, you won because I let you.
Right, and then
wasn't it that people are so worried not about winning but about not losing?
Yes,
they lose sight.
Sight, and then Rachel flips her hand, and she has beaten Michelle Yeoh.
She just walks out, and her mom meets her. She's sitting there, and they walk out. The mom gives her a death glare. You know, she looks at her.
That was
the mom.
So much is said without saying a word.
She just looks at Michelle Yeoh, and they turn and they walk away.
Right,
and
then so she's getting on a plane. And then here comes, and I do like where she's sitting in economy.
Yeah.
You know,
And this is a fun little rom. Now this comes.
This is a great rom-com trope that's done expertly.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like The Wedding Singer.
Yeah.
Where like the Billy Idol hits the guy with a cart in The Wedding Singer.
Yeah.
Billy Idol gets it.
Billy Idol gets it. That's right. Nobody touches Billy Idol. Well, yeah, they have this. They're going back. He's like, "Can I just get 5 minutes?"
And you know how it is on a plane with people yeah, trying to board and get their seats.
I do like that Nick is constant. Another thing where you can tell he's a good dude, where he's constantly like, trying,
let me get that for you. He pushes her luggage.
Hold on, 1 minute. Let me put this. Okay, and so what I'm trying to say is, and then he is so friendly and charismatic. Yes. I just need 5 minutes.
Yeah,
it's a great scene. He basically just convinces her. He's like, he tells her how he wanted to propose in his dream setting, and they don't have that, so he's like, now you know what I would have done,
right?
And then he proposes again on the plane,
and of course,
and the lady that was grumpy,
she says yes.
The lady that was grumpy before is like, yeah, she says yes. Yeah. She says yes.
And so they get, and then the reveal is that
the ring because they said earlier that Nick's mom, like when her husband proposed, like he went against, like, his family wishes or whatever.
Yeah,
so he had
sure.
to like get his
he couldn't
make
get
his
the
own
family ring.
Yeah,
he had to make one,
make
yeah.
his own ring. And so
when he pops the box,
it's a different ring than what's shown earlier.
And it's the ring that the mother was wearing.
Yeah, it was Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, it was the mother's ring.
That's right.
He had
yeah,
her approval. Yeah. That was the big thing because she admired it earlier. And it's
right.
like, wow, if he has that ring. And that's where Rachel, like, if it was a normal ring, she probably wouldn't have said yes, I don't think. But it,
I
she
agree.
Saw the
yeah.
mom's ring.
It was like right. the mom's on board.
Perfect. Yeah.
yeah.
So they go and they have like a big, you know, another big throwdown of a party. This one did kind of look CG. Like, this was the one where I was like, well, obviously they're just walking on a green screen. Maybe,
yeah.
Or there was stuff behind the, you know.
What's that building that they keep showing you in Singapore where it's like three buildings and then there's like connected by like a boat that's on top? It looks
oh,
like
I
a giant
know.
Boat. They showed you a couple times.
It looks
times.
Like a boat on the top of a building.
It looks like a boat like across three buildings.
Like on top, yeah. It's
maybe
a,
that's
yeah.
exactly
I'm like,
what
that
it was.
Has
yeah.
to be a
I was like, that, what is that?
Well,
yeah.
this is where I'm like, how much money did it cost to film this movie? Because I'm like, I know they want to show the rich, extravagant lifestyle. That usually comes along with rich, extravagant prices. And I'm like, this
yeah.
movie seems like it would have cost a fortune to film on location.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if some of it might just be like the, you know, the cost differential of like,
yeah.
you know, the world is really wealthy, but to film in Malaysia
yeah.
probably isn't as
that
expensive.
And people
you know?
Probably want to show off their wealth. So maybe they got a lot of people that are
yeah.
like, yeah, you can film
but probably,
on my.
You know, they're probably not using union crews.
Right. right. Yeah. yeah. So,
by the way, that is the Marina Bay Sands Hotel.
Oh, wow.
Nice. All I had to do was Google Singapore building ship. And that's the first yeah. thing that comes up.
Because it literally was like the Titanic
so
on top of buildings.
Is this thing, it's called Google? Is that
yeah.
what you used? Okay.
What is this weird machine?
Yeah, we need Steve to sit here with his phone for every episode. Just
could you send me a link to that in AIM?
yeah.
But yeah, so that's, and then, you know, we get a breakdown of all of our characters again. We see them all back. I do like the scene where one of the cousins is dating, like, a Lindsay Lohan style character.
Yeah.
And then
oh, the
Michelle Yeoh yeah. is just kind of like, well, you take care of that. And he was like, okay. And Oliver walks over and he was like, look, he's the third or fourth. He's the fourth in line. He's not going to get dick.
Yeah.
And then what you want to go after is that one.
Bernard or whatever
yeah.
that guy
is.
Is
the
super douche.
The only child.
yes.
Yeah.
That's the one you want. And immediately she drops the cousin and goes right after the guy. And he pushes the ladies away.
And at Rachel's wedding, she's still with the douche guy. So
yes.
I'm like, she's still hanging around with this guy.
Do we see Rachel's wedding?
Or whatever the party was.
I think it was an engagement.
I'm sorry, the engagement
yeah, yeah,
party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But I saw her and I'm like, oh, I didn't think she would still be allowed to like, but no, she's with the
douche
guy.
She's with the douche guy.
Like, that's why I think this would work so well as a TV show. Like,
give me that story.
I get the instinct because it's like that'd be a good subplot. I would really have liked to have seen more of the storyline about the guy having the affair.
Yeah.
And like, because I think if they had more time, they could have shown you a story where like he, not to justify an affair, but that
but like you get how he got there.
He's got some legitimate complaints. Like
yeah.
he, you know, like
well,
he,
like then they do that in the limo on the way to the wedding,
right?
Where he's just like, you know, I'm the outsider. Like you have to hide your stuff from me. Blah blah blah. And she's
yeah.
like, and he's like, you're not even pissed that I'm having an affair.
Yeah, you're pissed about how it'll look.
Yeah, you're pissed about how it'll look. And she, you know. And then she stands up for herself later. But.
His complaints are valid. It's how he handled it, isn't
sure,
it? And
sure.
we've, like
yeah.
I said before, like he's not wrong with feeling the way he feels, but you got to talk about it. And
right.
The, you know, don't go have an affair, right?
No. Yeah.
But so, yeah, I, and then how do they?
They just kind of ends with them kissing.
Oh,
like
okay.
that's how it ends.
Yeah.
Is like you see all your characters
yeah.
again. And then they have a big old kiss and that's
oh,
how it
and
ends.
And then the cousin that the husband was having an affair, got her come up, and it's because she left him and said, you can stay here. I'll stay in one of my other 15 properties.
I loved that, where he was just like, he's packing up. And she was like, where are you going? And then this one, I was like, oh, man, like, they're going to get back together.
Yeah, I thought that's where they were going.
And then she's just like, you paid for this apartment. It's yours. He's like, well, where are you going to go? And she's like, I own 15 hotels. I'm sure I'll find a room in one of them.
It was nice. You got
and
her
I do like where
and
she stands up for her son, where she's like, you'll see Caspian when it's
his time.
On his time, not yours.
Yeah.
And it was like, ooh.
It was nice. It was good. The story ties up very nicely, as, you know, good rom-coms. You don't want to leave on a downer. Like, everyone's story wraps up, and it works. It's very organic.
I do love when we run into Amanda again. That's what her name was Amanda, was the ex-girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
When Rachel's gets out of the car for the wedding, and everybody's like, Rachel, over here, and like, Amanda's in her way, and she just goes, Amanda, you're in my way.
Yeah, that
and
was
she
good.
Was just like, what just happened? I knew
that was one of the girls from the Bachelor
that
party.
I didn't actually realize it was the ex.
That doesn't even make it better. Yeah.
But no, I thought, like, I'm not a huge rom-com guy, but when they're done right, like, they're something special. Like,
I mean,
that's really
true
good.
About any genre.
Yeah,
of
that's
movies.
True.
I'm
that's
not a
true.
Big Western fan, but if you're going to show me The Searchers, I'm in.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Wow, this was great.
This was really,
this
really
is
good.
The perfect date movie. Like, but I mean, older, younger, it doesn't have like an age limit on it. But I mean, what a great date night movie.
Yeah.
It's just perfect.
No, it was. It was really good.
It's
really
something
well
the guys. It's funny,
it
you know,
funny.
And it has the romance element. But there's just a lot going on, and it never felt too like. It wasn't bad in a packed way, but I totally get what Tom means.
Yeah.
Where I love the world that they built. It was so expertly crafted. I do wish I could get more. So whether that's a sequel or if they do a spinoff.
Yeah.
But I
keep an eye out for Crazy Rich Asian Wedding.
Yeah, exactly. So I was.
Yeah, because you know that the next one's going to be about them
their
two
wedding.
Married.
That marriage.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to see next.
So he did write a trilogy. The next one is called China Rich Girlfriend. Is the next book in the trilogy.
Interesting.
Do we know what the general plot of that is?
I mean, I can read it from Wikipedia.
That's
what we do.
I don't want to ruin the illusion for you, Steve, but that's what we do.
Well, it's not what I do.
Let's see.
I know you're choked up over this lovely story, but
it must be a very touching Wikipedia synopsis. Joe, your synopsis is never make us tear up.
Well, that's a given. I try, you know, I don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, it just looks like it takes place a couple years after the first one, and I guess that Nick and Rachel get married. But again, it's also different, too, because it looks like in the book, in the sequel, Nick is not on speaking terms with his mother or his grandmother.
Oh. So maybe he bailed on him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Interesting.
Right. Well, we have that to look forward to, because you know they're making it.
It's happening.
But this is the first book came out in 2013, and he's already written three of them?
Yeah, it looks like one came out in 2015, and I think the third one came out last year.
Maybe he had the trilogy written, and he finally got published on the first, and then they rolled them out or something.
Yeah, maybe. I'm like, dude, that dude's a machine.
It's working
for him.
That's
the way those Gillian Flynn books were, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
She cranked those three out.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it might have been like she had it sitting in a drawer. Because I know that like Carrie was the first novel Stephen King had published, but it was not the first one he had written.
Oh, really?
And so then like some of those... Follow-up ones were actually predate Carrie, and he's like, once he became a name, he's like, here, do that.
I have this one, too.
Yeah.
Who's that author who writes, like, three or four novels, or he publishes three or four novels a year, but he doesn't actually write them? He basically gives these writers the plot line. He's like, I want you to do this in this chapter. You write it, though, and then I'll give the approval.
It's
but he's, like, the best-selling.
James Patterson?
Yeah. I think it is.
Who's the other guy? There's another one.
He's got a lot of books.
There's James Patterson. There's another guy, too.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll put my name on it, but you're going to ghost write
it.
Yeah.
He basically reviews it, and if he likes it, awesome. If not, he's like, go back and rewrite this part.
All right.
So he's not an author as much as he's a project manager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the Michael Scott of dimes of airport novels.
Yeah. That's crazy. But yeah, like, I'm interested to see how they handle it in the sequel. Clearly, we will be getting one.
We're going to get his father. That's what we get.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm willing to bet. That's what the... You're supposed to come back here and take over, and this is what you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a good one though.
Yeah, it was good.
So
was
really good. I guess it's for this.
I do
one.
Have a video recovery, Tom.
Oh, that's right. You said you wanted to do a video recovery. Why don't you? Do you have a video recovery?
I do, Tom.
Did you go to the salt mines?
Yeah. Oh, dug deep. No.
I thought only Dan had keys down there.
No. Well, I broke in the back door. So yeah, this is a film that I rented at Blockbuster when it first came out. This is a 2002 film directed by Justin Lin, and written by Justin Lin. You may know him from Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift all the way through 6, I believe. He was
He did Fast and 7, Furious. 7 is 1 and 8 is
yeah, so, I mean, he did like 4 Fast and Furious movies. He really set the tone there and
he
set
did the
it
Star
up.
Trek movie?
Yep, he did the third Star Trek movie. But he started off with this project in 2002 called Better Luck Tomorrow. It's a fantastic film. I rented it from Blockbuster on a whim. You know, looked at the cover. I'm like, oh, this sounds interesting. And it blew me away. I'm like, this is so good. It has a very indie feel. Like it's like Clerks, Trainspotting.
It's the Asian Clerks.
Yeah, it's the feel of it feels like how Clerks was, and it's got a Trainspotting vibe. You know, Richard Linklater, like slacker style. Mm-hmm. It's that era. But Justin Lin had this story, very similar story to Kevin Smith, that he needed to get this story out. And he said, if it did great, obviously excellent. If it doesn't, then at least I got it out there. He racked up 10 credit cards, just like when Kevin Smith put all the stuff on a credit card, 10 credit cards. He made this movie happen and it was a Sundance darling. But what more importantly, this was an American, film with an all Asian American cast.
Yep.
Entirely Asian American. So this was back in 2002. So long before Crazy Rich Asians was this movie. And it was, you know, very critically acclaimed. Roger Ebert was a big proponent. And there was actually this altercation at Sundance where after the movie, they were doing their Q&A like most of these Sundance screenings have. And this older white guy goes, why would you want to make this movie that makes, you know, Asians look so bad and all this with drugs and crime and everything. And then Roger Ebert stood up and you need to just go watch the YouTube video. It's on there. Just look up Roger Ebert, Better Luck Tomorrow. He's like, just because you're an Asian actor doesn't mean you have to fall into one Asian role. Like, you know, you don't say that if a white guy is a drug dealer or a criminal. Why are you making white people look bad? He goes, they can play whatever character they want and be in this role. And it doesn't mean that the whole race looks bad. Like, he lights this guy up. It's fantastic. But the story goes that like that night they dubbed that altercation and the screener on VHSs because back in the day like DVD had just come out, people can't burn DVDs, so they put like that video clip on VHS and the movie and sent it out to every press publication they could, and it really got people interested and fired up to see the movie, and it's fantastic. But it's a coming of age high school movie that has that Trainspotting drugs and crime vibe
calling it Clerks meets Trainspotting is pretty spot
I think
on.
That's what it yeah. really feels like. But it also the high
train
school
spot on
yeah.
Or Train Clerks.
It's fantastic though. It's about these high school kids and it follows this main character. Is it Ben, I think, is the main character's name?
Yep.
And he is you know, he's really smart, he's this A+ honors type student, but he also has these friends and they pull off small heists. I would call them scams. They're scams at first. He you know, whatever, with like homework paper, doing people's homework or whatever. He starts off with these lowly things. They steal stuff from electronic shops and then return them with different stickers and get money, small things. But as they get a taste of this crime, they get in with the wrong crowd, they start dealing drugs, and his life escalates to this
spirals
out of control. And so it's really fascinating. But again, this entire cast is Asian American, which was unheard of.
This
for
is John Chow.
Cho.
Yeah, John Cho, who is
what did I say?
Harold Chow.
Oh, Cho.
John Cho is in it, though, who, of course, is Harold and Harold and Kumar, and he's been in a ton of stuff. But
you get that shout out in Harold and Kumar when they're
do you really?
With those posers. They're driving away at one point, and one of the posers yells out of the truck. He's like, better luck tomorrow.
Ah, that's great.
That's pretty good.
And also another fun fact, Better Luck Tomorrow is actually set in the Fast and the Furious universe.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Justin Lin has said that
Han is the
same actor.
It's not Quinn. Sung Kang plays Han in this movie. And when Justin Lin came on board to rewrite Tokyo Drift, he added the Han character. And he said, I've always thought of it as a literal character.
That's insane.
So yeah, Han is
awesome.
Han from Better Luck Tomorrow. Shared universe. So it's fascinating. Go watch this movie. But again, 16 years before Crazy Rich Asians, not to put down that, but I mean, Justin Lin on his second film ever, I think, he did this where he put all his money on the line and he made an American movie with all Asian American cast. You would notice a lot of them, like the names we've already mentioned. Another fun fact, the movie, before it was done with production, they were running out of money and he had a deadline to meet and the movie was going to fall apart and never be seen if not for MC Hammer.
What?
MC Hammer gave him the money to finish the movie. He was working at a museum or something that had to do with cameras and film, and MC Hammer visited when he was working, and MC Hammer said, "Do you know about digital cameras?" And Justin Lin explained to MC Hammer about all the different technology and everything, and MC Hammer's like, "Here's my number if you ever like want to talk or whatever." And then all these, and then years later when he needed the money, he's like, "I'm just gonna call this guy." His number was the same. He explained the project and Hammer bailed him out. That's gave him the crazy money.
You'd think that we'd see more MC Hammer in Fast and Furious movies.
So
then.
Yeah, so
I'm just more shocked that MC Hammer had money 10 years.
I know.
But and there's a thank you and better luck tomorrow to MC Hammer. So
that's funny.
If not for MC Hammer, it wouldn't get made, but great movie. It is fantastic.
May we talk about that more?
And if you want, watch it, because coming up on the next Real Spoilers 0.5, which is on Patreon, sign up for that $5 a month, but we are going to do our retrospective on Better Luck Tomorrow.
That's nice.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Gavin.
You're welcome.
So I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
I'm Steve Kelly. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook, The Godcast.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, B-U-T-T-S-21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online in a myriad of places. iTunes, where you can rate, review, subscribe. Facebook, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. Join the League of Show Sharers, and on Patreon at patreon.com/realspoiler. So that's it for this one. I guess next time we will tackle Happy Time Murders.
I am excited for this movie.
So that is what you have to look forward to. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, May Lee marries Wang Ta.
Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you.
Yeah, that was in English. Sorry, Tom.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.